This evening's reading is Genesis 11, 27 to chapter 9, verse 12, and it's on page 13 of the Church Bible. This is the account of Terah. Terah became the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran, and Haran became the father of Lot. While his father Terah was still alive, Haran died in Ur of the Chaldeans, in the land of his birth. Abram and Nahor were both married. The wife of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the wife of Nahor's wife was Milcah. She was the daughter of Haran, the father of both Milcah and Iscah. Now Sarai was barren, she had no children. Terah took his son Abram, his grandson Lot, son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, the wife of his son Abram, and together they set out from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to Canaan. But when they came to Haran, they settled there. Terah lived 205 years, and he died in Haran. The Lord had said to Abram, "Leave your country, your people, and your father's household, and go to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse, and all peoples on earth will be blessed through you." So Abram went as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. He took his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, all the possessions they had accumulated, and the people they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan, and they arrived there. Abram travelled through the land as far as the site of the great tree of Moreh at Shechem. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land. The Lord appeared to Abram and said, "To your offspring I will give this land." So he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. From there, he went on towards the hills east of Bethel and pitched his tent, with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. There he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. Then Abram set out and continued towards the Negev.
Thanks, Kerry, for a reading with lots of interesting names. And also thanks too to Liz and to Martina, because the songs and the themes in the songs and some of the themes in the prayers were just so perfect for tonight, so I'm really, really grateful. I feel as if you've just listened to God and heard what's on his heart, which is great. How far would you travel for the sake of a promise? Tonight's reading from Genesis 11 begins in Babylon, which is present-day Iraq, and it reaches as far as Canaan, which would become Israel. And it's the story of a very ordinary family with whom God got intimately involved and through whom the whole history of the world would be changed. And it was a family that had known pain and heartbreak. Abram's brother had died and Abram's wife Sarai was unable to have children. And the text mentions it twice in the same breath to make sure we get the point. Now Sarai was barren, she had no children. It's not an auspicious start to their story. Incidentally, you may have spotted that Abraham and Sarah's names are different in our reading, and this is because they get their more familiar names later on. Now, we don't know what prompted Abraham's father to leave everything behind and set out for Canaan. Sometimes these gaps in the text are the narrator's way of drawing us into the story, of making us think more deeply about it. What Terah did not know was that his decision was all part of God's much bigger plan for his son, Abram. And that made me think. Our small day-to-day decisions may be far more important to God's kingdom than we may ever realize. And that's why it's so important for us to stay close to God, listening to him and obeying him on a day-to-day basis. Terah's family would have made the journey in a caravan following the traditional trading routes. No, not one of these, one of these. But actually, it struck me, that one of these is quite good because the name on the side of the caravan is Constance. And one of the things that God was towards Abraham was constant. And one of the things that Abraham was, in between a few ups and downs and a few blips in his life because he was human, Abraham was constant to God. So maybe a caravan called Constance is quite appropriate. But the kind of caravan that they travelled with was one of these. And it would have been an enormous undertaking. Imagine moving house with all your extended family, all your relations, all your goods and chattels, as well as your servants and animals, and you get the picture. And they would have followed a route that swept north, avoiding the inhospitable desert. As the crow flies, the journey between the two countries is only 500 miles, but that would have doubled by the time they got there. And Terah never actually finished his journey. He was only halfway to Canaan when he decided to stop at a place called Haran. But this was not God's plan for Abram. Remember Genesis 12:1. The Lord had said to Abram, "Leave your country, your people, and your father's household, and go to the land I will show you." This wasn't a suggestion, it was a command. It was a call for Abram to leave behind everything that was known, everything that was familiar, everything that was secure, to step by faith into the unknown. "Go to the land I will show you," God tells him, but he doesn't say where. "Will you trust me, Abram? Will you follow me wherever I take you? Will you obey me in everything I ask of you?" I thought it was very reminiscent of Jesus' words to his first disciples, "Follow me," because Jesus doesn't tell them what, where, or how. He just calls them to follow. And this was a huge thing for God to ask of Abraham, but it comes with an extraordinary promise of blessing. Again, Genesis 1, verses 2 and 3. "I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you." We might ask, why had God chosen Abram? What had he done that made him so special? Well, the answer is nothing. It was God's grace to Abram to bless him so that he might become the channel of God's blessing to the world. Theologian John Goldingay writes, "The reason God settles on some people rather than others is not to exclude the others, but to include them. God settles on one person in order to make him or her the way in to including others." This also made me think, because how have you and I been blessed? Because if we've been blessed, we've been blessed in order to be a blessing to others. We've been blessed in order to include others in the blessing which we have received. Well, we're left to imagine Abraham's thoughts and emotions as he sets out in response to God's call. But when he arrives in Canaan, as if to honor his obedience, God appears to him again and reveals another detail of the promise. Genesis 12:7, "To your offspring I will give this land." Abraham may be a stranger in a strange land, but he discovers that God is God of Canaan, as well as God of Haran, as well as God of Ur of the Chaldees. And Abraham's response is to build an altar so that he can worship. And it'll also act as a permanent reminder of his encounter with God and a permanent reminder of God's promises. Sometimes we need something physical, like a card in your Bible, or I collect stones. And I often, if I'm in a particular place, I pick up a stone just to remind me of God's promises to me. And we gathered stones when we scattered my son's ashes on this wonderful beach in the northeast of Scotland. And I just took a stone from the beach to remind me of how God had supported us all the way through Andy's illness and how he continues to support us. And if I'm feeling sad, I'll sometimes hold that stone and I say, "God, I know you love me. I know you loved Andy. I know you love our family. I know you're working for us all the time. And it really comforts and helps me. Well, Abraham didn't have a stone that he could put in his pocket, but he sort of set up stone altars wherever he went. And every time he wandered backwards and forwards, he would have passed them. He'd have thought, that's the place where God spoke to me. That's the place where he promised this to me. That's the place where I worshipped. And it was going to help build his faith, build his hope in God, and sort of fuel him, as it were. Now, we remember that there's a bit of an obstacle. Abraham has no children and no obvious hope of any. Now, Sarai was barren. She had no children. But despite this seemingly insurmountable barrier, Abraham continues to walk through the land. Everywhere he went, he built altars and worshipped. And it was as if he was symbolically taking possession of the land, even although it didn't belong to him yet. Despite the obstacles, Abraham didn't give up, but he pressed on and pressed into what God had in store for him. And the obstacles we face may be there to help us discover how genuine our commitment is. Have we the staying power the task requires? Can we actually be trusted with God's plans? And the problems we face may be the means by which we're strengthened for a particular task. And it's also during difficult times of testing when we tend to grow and develop the most. We may not like it, but it's true. And Abraham made all sorts of mistakes, and you can pick up Genesis and read his story for yourself. But the difficulties he encountered along the way were all refining his dependence on God. And all the time, Abraham was becoming stronger so that when he faced the ultimate challenge, God's plan did not fail. So as Abraham traveled, God continued to speak to him, reaffirming his promises, and Abraham continued to worship. Genesis 13, the Lord said to Abraham, "Lift your eyes from where you are and look north and south and east and west. All the land that you see, I will give to you and your offspring forever. I will make your offspring like the dust of the earth, so that if anyone could count the dust, then your offspring could be counted. Go, walk through the length and breadth of the land, for I am giving it to you." What a great visual picture. Abraham knew all about dust. His feet were constantly covered by the stuff. "I am giving it to you." Because God had said it, it would happen, even although it hadn't happened yet. For Sarai was still barren. All this time, Abraham had remained silent about this obvious obstacle to God's blessing. But for the first time in Genesis 15, he begins to question God. "O sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless? You have given me no children, so a servant in my household will be my heir." Then the word of the Lord came to Abraham. "This man will not be your heir, but a son coming from your own body will be your heir." And God took Abraham outside and said, "Look up at the heavens and count the stars, if indeed you can count them." If I go out into my garden and look up at the sky, I'm lucky if I can see any stars, let alone many stars, because even on a clear night, most of them remain hidden because of light pollution. Out in the countryside, of course, it's different. And a few years ago, I had the chance to see the stars as Abraham would have seen them when I trekked across the Sinai Desert with the Bedouin. And at nighttime, we unrolled our sleeping bags and we slept under the night sky. And words cannot describe the multitude of twinkling lights, the clarity with which they shone. And we would lie there going to sleep, counting shooting stars rather than sheep. It was amazing. It was absolutely awesome. And what was awesome was seeing it and thinking, my golly, this was what God showed Abraham. It was awesome. Well, God said to Abraham, "So shall your offspring be." Now we know that Abraham's response to God's voice has always been to worship. But now we get a glimpse of what's in Abraham's heart. Abraham believed the Lord and he credited it to him as righteousness. Sometimes people say they believe in God, but what they mean is that they believe he exists. There's no relationship there. They don't trust in him. This extraordinary moment shows that Abraham totally trusts God, even although all of God's promises are still to be fulfilled. And God declares Abraham to be righteous, not because of anything he's done, but purely and simply because Abraham trusts God, even though the circumstances look impossible. He trusts God purely and simply because God is God. And God seals this special moment by making a lasting covenant with Abraham. But, like the refrain running through the story, Sarai continues to be barren. How long, O Lord, how long? And a new complication arises when Sarai tries to take matters into her own hands, and Glyn's going to be talking about this next week. But God will not be thwarted. He appears to Abraham once again to tell him that Sarai will have a child within the year. And this is the moment when God changes Abraham's name to Abraham, which means father of many, Genesis 17. No longer will you be called Abraham. Your name will be Abraham, for I have made you a father of many nations. I will make you very fruitful. I will make nations of you, and kings will come from you. I will establish my covenant as an everlasting covenant between me and you and your descendants after you for the generations to come, to be your God and the God of your descendants after you. The whole land of Canaan, where you are now an alien or foreigner, I will give as an everlasting possession to you and your descendants after you, and I will be their God. I have made you. When God determines something, it exists, even if it hasn't happened yet. I have made you. I will make you. We're so bound up by time, but God isn't. God is outside time. So both these statements are as one and the same to him. I have made you. I will make you. And God has also expanded the promise yet again, because Abraham will no longer be a great nation. He'll become the father of many nations, and he'll number kings among his descendants, of whom the King of Kings, Jesus the Messiah, will be numbered. God's covenant relationship, as well as the promise of land, is now everlasting. And of course, all this depends on the covenant being kept. Will Abraham and his descendants be faithful? And God now tells Abraham and Sarah, for her name has also been changed, that Isaac will be born within the year. It seems ridiculous, and this is reflected in the child's name, for Isaac means he laughs. And that's precisely what both Abraham and Sarah did when they heard the news. Genesis 17 again. God also said to Abraham, as for Sarai, your wife, you're no longer to call her Sarai. Her name will be Sarah. I will bless her and will surely give you a son by her. I will bless her so that she will be the mother of nations. Kings of peoples will come from her. Abraham fell face down. He laughed and said to himself, will a son be born to a man 100 years old? Will Sarah bear a child at the age of 90? Then God said, yes, your wife Sarah will bear you a son, and you will call him Isaac. I will establish my covenant with him as an everlasting covenant for his descendants after him, with Isaac, whom Sarah will bear to you by this time next year. I wonder what, if anything, Abraham said to Sarah after this conversation with God. But soon Sarah heard about it for herself. 3 visitors, one of whom turns out to be God, turn up on Isaac's doorstep. Not that tents have doorsteps, of course, but you know what I mean. And we've got to Genesis 18. Where is your wife Sarah? They asked him. There in the tent, he said. Then the Lord said, I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son. Now Sarah was listening at the entrance to the tent, which was behind him. Abraham and Sarah were already very old and well advanced in years, and Sarah was past the age of childbearing. So Sarah laughed to herself as she thought, after I'm worn out and my master is old, will I now have this pleasure? And one of the commentaries I read said it's a bit ambiguous. Is she talking about the pleasure of making love with her husband or the pleasure of having a child? But I think the text means the pleasure of having a child. Then the Lord said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh and say, will I really have a child now that I am old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? I will return to you at the appointed time next year, and Sarah will have a son. And God is true to his word. Three chapters later, and Isaac is born. Genesis 21. Now the Lord was gracious to Sarah, as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah what he had promised. Sarah became pregnant and bore a son to Abraham in his old age, at the very time God had promised him. Abraham gave the name Isaac to the son Sarah bore him. Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. And Sarah said, God has brought me laughter, and everyone who hears about this will laugh with me. And she added, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. God has brought me laughter, and everyone who hears about this will laugh with me. It's a wonderful response to God doing something that was completely impossible and totally unforeseen. And I'm sure some of us here carry deep, deep desires from God that they're just waiting to be answered. And my prayer for you is that God will bring you laughter and that we'll be able to rejoice with you for the answers that you get. But the laughter soon turns into something far more serious, because a few years later, when Isaac is a young man, God tests Abraham for one last time. And we know that it's a test because Scripture tells us, but Abraham does not know this. Genesis 22. Sometime later, God tested Abraham. He said to him, take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains I will tell you about. In January of this year, on the 20th of January, I spoke about the pain of losing my son Andy and how I lived with the grief of watching him die, but how I also had to lived with the joy of the promises that God had given to me about looking after my children. And I'm not going to repeat what I said then now, but do go and listen to that online if you want to. But suffice it to say, I can well imagine the pain that God's words caused Abraham and Sarah. Ironically, such a sacrifice would not have seemed strange to their culture. There was, after all, a tradition of offering the firstborn, and even child sacrifice was not unknown in Canaan. But nonetheless, Abraham would have set out with a very heavy heart. But the text suggests that Abraham trusts God to do something, even if he doesn't actually know what it is. Because when they arrive at Mount Moriah, Abraham tells his servants to wait while he goes up to sacrifice. Stay here with the donkey while I and the boy will go over there. We will worship and then we will come back to you. Does Abraham know what he's saying? Does he mean that they'll both come back? Or have the words tumbled prophetically out of Abraham's mouth without Abraham knowing where they've come from? And Abraham gets Isaac to carry the wood while he carries the fire and the knife. And now it's Isaac's turn to speak. Again, Genesis 22. The wood and lamb are here, Isaac said. The wood is here, Isaac said, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering? That's my mistake, copying the words across. The wood is here, Isaac said, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? Abraham answered, God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. And again, Does Abraham realize what he's saying? And the tension builds as Abraham builds an altar and arranges the wood on it before taking out his knife to slay his son. And as he's about to strike, he hears a voice. Abraham, Abraham, do not lay a hand on the boy. Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God, because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son. Abraham looked up, and there in the thicket he saw a ram caught by its horns. He went over and took the ram and sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called that place, "The Lord will provide." And to this day it is said, on the mountain of the Lord it will be provided. Abraham's test is over, but what was God actually doing here? And the answer can be found in God's final words to Abraham. "I swear by myself, declares the Lord, that because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as the sand on the seashore. Your descendants will take possession of the cities of their enemies, and through your offspring all nations on earth will be blessed because you have obeyed me." There was always a temptation that Isaac would become more important to Abraham than God, that the gift would become more beloved than the giver. Would Abraham be willing to obey God, whatever it took? Back to John Goldingay again. This story invites us to name our Isaac to ourselves, that gift of God that embodies God's promise, God's faithfulness, God's generosity, God's incalculable love. It invites us to imagine that Isaac on our open hand, capable of being taken away by God. It is the way that God and we discover whether Isaac matters more than God to us. You have to do it with your hand actually open, not with your fist clenched. You have to see what God will do, taking nothing for granted, not knowing how the story will end. We have to live through it as Abraham did. We can do that because Abraham's God is not someone who takes things away just for the sake of it. Yahweh is the one who, when we offer things on an open hand, does give them back one way or another and deepens what they mean for us. Indeed, what God means to us and what we mean to God is also deepened. The place where Abraham held Isaac on his open hand became the place where God gave. And some of us may be being challenged by God because he no longer takes first place in our lives. And maybe we need to ask God to show us what is our own personal Isaac, and are we willing to hold our hand out and offer it to God, trusting him that at the place of sacrifice, he will be the one who provides. And others of you may be waiting, hoping for an answer to prayer as the fulfillment of a promise. And maybe it's right for you to pray for God's strength to persevere as Abraham persevered, to be faithful as God was faithful, to be faithful as Abraham was faithful, because our God is faithful and nothing is too hard for him. Maybe God's given you promises in the past and you've let go of them and you've forgotten them. And God wants to remind you of them again tonight. He's asking you to pick them up again and run with them. We are the people of his promise because we have inherited his promises through Abraham, through Jesus, the promises given to Abraham are our promises too.
And let's just use the last song that we're going to sing as our prayer of response. My times are in your hands. I know I'll never understand, but I'll trust in you as Abraham trusted. Sometimes my heart grows cold. I'm sorry when I take control. How I'm needing you. And the refrain is, I will hold on. I will hold on. Lord, we know that we take control. We know that we don't always trust you. Help us as we hear that challenge of Abraham to hold on and trust you, to let go of our control and trust you. So let's stand and sing it and pray that we mean it and live it.